Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons.
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery, a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
And we made it. We made it to the starting line. We'll see if we make it to the finish line.
Yeah, this is like, you know, that movie on the hit podcast Friendly Fire with Mel Gibson and the other guy. You know, they're big track stars, but it's also World War I. Feels like you and I are big Star Trek podcasters, but it's also the first of 23 weeks.
Yeah, this is our Gallipoli.
Yeah.
Everybody's been saying it.
Yeah. Our parents have been talking about their Vietnam forever, and if they only knew what our Gallipoli was.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of thought that that Big Rod had broken a pool cue in half and left one of the pieces on the floor in between us at the beginning of this week, because something pretty crazy happened, which was I got a special invite to the online premiere party for Star Trek Cold and Lower Decks, and you did not.
Yeah, it didn't feel great. I mean, it's a feeling that I think the both of us have had for a while, which is, you know, we're not in the pocket. We don't want to be in the pocket, but we still want the things that those in the pocket get access to.
Yeah, we see them on the other side of the fence enjoying their parties and their free comm badges or whatever.
Their gift boxes full of booze and T-shirts and stuff like. Who thinks that we wouldn't want those things?
I kind of thought that gift box was coming because they asked for my address.
Maybe it is. Do you think it was stolen off your porch?
I don't know. I mean, the USPS has been crippled by a political appointee, so it's not inconceivable that it was just lost in the mail.
Just imagine your life is the bag of stinky dicks taken human form that is a person that steals packages off of a stranger's porch, and you open up a box expecting it to be anything of value, and instead it's a Star Trek shirt and a pint of whiskey.
Oh man, I was hoping for a balls shaver.
Right.
What the hell is this crap?
Yeah, last week they did steal a ball shaver off of your porch, and it's one good looking thief.
Yeah, that guy's getting it now.
You got to forgive the thief for that.
But you were able to rectify the situation.
I mean, I'm known as someone who writes a really sweet email. And you and I have known this for years. When you want someone to butter up another person using the written word,
right?
I'm your guy.
When the Uxbridge Shimoda Corporation needs to curry favor with someone, it's not me they turn to.
Yeah. I am basically a hammer to the kneecap in human form when it comes to writing emails. But this time I placed myself at the feet of the couple of marketing contacts that we have at CBS Viacom.
Yeah.
Asked super nice, and they, on their end, super accommodating and nice in their own right. They sent me that link 20 minutes before the premiere. I thought there was no way I was going to get to watch the show, but at the very last moment, I was able to attend, and it was super fun. They set it up like there was a chat room happening at the same time, and
yeah,
and they showed us two episodes, which was sweet.
There were some heavy hitters in that chat room. Anson Mount was there.
Yeah,
Wilson Cruz was in there. Jerry O'Connell was in there.
I've been in chat rooms before with Jerry O'Connell, and they usually go in a very different direction. So
yeah, the chat room was running for like 30 minutes before the show actually started. And when the show started, like the dialogue is so dense in this cartoon that I basically had to stop paying attention to the chat because I just couldn't process.
I went full screen with it almost immediately.
Yeah. There was a fun moment where I was sitting on the couch watching this, and my wife comes home and finds me watching a cartoon on the TV. And she was like, a plant on our landing outside the front door had fallen over. And she's like, I need your help with this. Can you pause that? And I was like, I can't. I literally can't pause this. It's a live stream. And she did not believe me. And it did not go well, Enterprise.
Oh, no.
I mean, we patched things up later. Like, I couldn't explain it in the moment what was going on. And she was too frustrated to, like, hear a 3-sentence reason why I couldn't.
I mean, you two are grizzled veterans in the I can't believe this is your job wars that is still ongoing. It's actually a quagmire at this point, Ben.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure the American people will lose their willingness to continue to fund this soon enough.
Alex Kurtzman truly is the Lyndon Johnson of Star Trek at this point.
He keeps trying to de-escalate, but too much political pressure on him. But yeah, it was really fun. And then afterwards, there was like a digital after party, which I spent about 5 minutes in before getting bored and leaving. Somebody was tending bar, which I didn't really do anything with that. But there was somebody doing like live fan art in one room, and there was a live DJ.
Yeah,
like the music was dope. Like the DJ was like doing it right and playing really fun stuff, and everybody in that chat room was like, for sure, feeling like they wished they were on that dance floor.
It was dance floor blue balls for sure.
Yeah, it's like a video on the left side of your screen with a DJ standing in front of a green screen spinning the ones and the twos, and then a little chat room on the right side of your screen with people going like, nice, love this song.
I think the artwork panel was the one that I thought was the coolest, because that seemed to be, I wasn't sure if the dance floor was live or if it was a pre-tape, but it was very clear that the artwork one was live, and you could interact with the artist as she was drawing different panels for the show and ask her questions about her process and all that. And I thought that was neat. But yeah, it seemed like the rest of the stuff was pre-tape in a way that, I mean, I am definitely not knocking the effort whatsoever. When you're doing an event, you're just doing the best you can. And I thought what they did was great.
I did too. Well, that was our review of the premiere. So tune in next week for our review of episode 1.
Put a little distance into the production here. Help ourselves out. Mm. I like that.
I think people would burn us to the ground.
Yeah. Well, we're seasoned pros at burning goodwill. So
yeah, that's true. Do you want to get into the episode that we came to talk about today, Adam?
Got to do it, Ben. Really excited to talk about a new Star Trek series on our new Star Trek podcast. It's Lower Decks Season 1, Episode 1, Second Contact.
We have been waiting for someone worthy of our attention.
What? Who are you?
We've encountered them.
Those are Klingons?
I thought that the opening gag of this was really well executed. It's a captain's log, but it's a captain's log in the voice of a character that just doesn't give captain vibes.
Right.
And I think that like when you're casting for voice,
like this gag needs to work in your casting process, right?
I feel like this was the read to cast the part, because from here you can draw your outwardly concentric circles around a scene like this to determine, you know, what a voice actor's abilities are and strengths are. And I think if you start here, this is going to give you a lot of ideas about where else you could go. And you're right, like Jack Quaid reads this perfectly if what you're going for is a character like his.
Captain's log, stardate 57436.2.
The Cerritos is... Aesthetically, what we get is a space dock of the, you know, Star Trek Search for Spock variety, you know, various starships hovering around it. And I thought that the opening shots were really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's something really smart going on with this show in terms of how they kind of capture our nostalgia for TNG without relying on it too much to make us care about what happens once the story is underway.
It seems like a real magic trick, like doing the math of sprinkling enough references throughout the show to make it seem as though like it's credibly Star Trek,
yeah,
created by credibly knowledgeable people.
In the context of a jokey comedy series, you can, you know, ring that bell as many times as you want.
Right.
So this is the USS Cerritos. It is a decidedly less exciting ship to be on than the Starship Enterprise. What their mission is going to be for this first episode is making second contact with a planet that has already had first contact made with it. It's kind of a paper pushing mission where they just go like kind of finalize the documentation of a species being in diplomatic contact with the Federation.
This is something that we've always wondered about throughout our years of talking about TNG and Deep Space Nine. Like, it's one thing to make dinner, but the dinner maker isn't often the one cleaning the dishes after.
Right.
there's always going to be second contact, even though it's not really ever referred to. Like that mission in season 7 of TNG where they're like dropping off replicators on Bajor, like that was an example of kind of a second contact mission that you got with the A squad. But you know, like it's an entire ship or fleet of ships mission to do things like that all the time.
Yeah, and the Enterprise is not the ship that gets tapped on the shoulder for that most of the time. So
no, that's got to feel like slumming it if you're them.
Yeah, and I mean, like they talk about that all the time in TNG, right? Like anybody that gets stationed on the Enterprise, it, like everybody's like patting them on the back, going like, "Wow, good for you! Like fresh out of Starfleet Academy, and you got stationed on the Enterprise, you must be sharp shit." So
I wonder if there's a trauma associated to being the A squad, to be the Enterprise, and to only get the high level missions over and over and over again. And like all you want is a second contact every once in a while just to like breathe.
Yeah. Yeah. Their vacations to Risa even become too exciting to be relaxing.
Geordi won't even work on the cooling system of the Big D anymore. He just can't be around that panel.
Yeah. We also meet in this scene Ensign Mariner, played by Tawny Newsome, and she kind of like catches Ensign Boimler practicing his captain's log in this mop closet and starts making fun of him. She is totally schwasty off of some like contraband Romulan booze she got at this space station. And she's got like a whole crate of naughty stuff, and she seems to be in a mood to party hard.
You can tell that Mariner is cool because she's got the rolled up sleeves and the open uniform that Kirk used to rock when he was off duty.
I really like the midpoint between TOS movies and TNG uniform that they have in this era of Trek. I've been seeing a lot of people posting cosplay photos of these characters, and I'm into it.
We used to talk a lot about the crew stratification between like the back zips and the front zips on the ship. And like we had a lot of, look, I'm just going to say it, had a lot of disparaging comments for the front zips that were on the crew once the A squad transitioned to back zip. But if you've got a back zip, you can't open up the front anymore. You can't let it out.
I can't believe we fucking fell for that social stratification shit. I mean,
I know.
A couple of guys as class conscious as us, and we were suckered in to thinking that the back zips were super cool and the front zips were super drool.
After a bit of Batleth play, Boimler takes one to the leg, and there's something so horrifying about, and I know we've talked about this before, like stabby violence is almost passé at this point. I feel like every television show, every movie, you get to experience what it's like to be stabbed through a character. But slash is so much worse. And then slash, as depicted in this scene, where the sharp bladed object sticks and there's like the flap open. It's so graphic.
It's like really using the advantage of this being a cartoon to the fullest extent, because if you did this in a live action, like the gag is basically like a flesh wound this gruesome is not a big deal in a future where you can
wave a light over it.
Right. But you have to know like a lot about Star Trek to get that, I think. Like, this is inviting you in a fun way. And then we smash cut to the title sequence, which I think is fucking great.
The musical accompaniment to this, I think, is, and I think throughout the show, is vital in evoking that positive nostalgia you have for a specific moment in Star Trek time.
Yeah.
That just post TNG time. Because when you hear the strings start and you see the gas cloud, that is everything about 90s Star Trek right there in a couple of seconds.
I mean, it's a TNG image in that first shot, but the Cerritos is engaging in all these kind of TNG era scenes and doing badly.
Right. There's always going to be a Cerritos in the fleet, right?
Yeah. I feel like if we had been in the writer's room, this would have been the Hood, right?
I think the Hood is going on first contact missions. I'm not saying they're happy about it.
This is definitely the kind of planet that they would be going on first contact missions to. Just like some pretty chill piggy guys.
This being the first episode in a series, we've got to introduce all our characters, Ben. And so we go around the horn a little bit. We meet the incoming Tendi, who has disembarked from a Previa class shuttle and is ready to get her assignment.
Yeah, she's an Orion.
Voiced by Noelle Wells, who was a favorite of mine on SNL and is just a great comic. She meets up with Boimler and Mariner right away, who are busy at work fixing a replicator that keeps making hot bananas. Ben, there's always money in the hot banana replicator, is what I've always said.
Yeah.
They're in a workshop, kind of. They're not working on this replicator in the place where the replicator lives.
Yeah.
They've taken it from a wall and they've moved it to an area where such things are serviced.
It's especially shit duty for them because they are on the command track and not engineers. So I got the sense that Boimler was like a bad person to ask to fix a replicator. Hmm. And I like that. I like that at this level of starship repair, it's like, I don't know, get this fucking guy to do it. Who cares?
It's a commander delegating to a lieutenant, delegating to an ensign.
Mariner and Boimler give Tendi a little tour of the ship. They're walking her around, show her the map of the ship. She thinks that they're up on some cool deck and in fact, they are down in the lower left-hand section. This is where they meet Ensign Rutherford, who has recently been affixed with a Vulcan cybernetic head implant.
There's got to be a backstory here. Like, this is the thing that I didn't quite understand, was like, Rutherford's human. He's got a round ear on one side, and he's got a metal pointy ear on the other.
They say he's been recently augmented, but it doesn't seem like the Federation is the kind of place where you just kind of like voluntarily have half of your head replaced with a machine. That's more of a Borg thing, right?
Right.
This thing doesn't work super great. It keeps kind of trying to enforce Vulcan-ness on him.
Yeah, this is pretty fun. He's nervous for a date happening later, and the implant can't allow him to become excited about it.
He's got to stay logical, or this implant could really fall apart.
This entire tour is about establishing the differences between Mariner and everyone else, right? Mariner sprinkles throughout their dialogue this trivia about herself. She's been on a bunch of ships. She's been both promoted and demoted. She's been around the block.
She used to be a lieutenant.
It really makes you understand how hard she chafes against the people in command. Like, she feels like she's better than this, but also clearly she's not. It's a real Adam in any workplace for the last 10 to 15 years sort of sensibility, I think.
I think that, yeah, she's a very interesting character because she acts like she has nothing to lose in the way of somebody that lives in a perfect society where if this doesn't work out for her, it's not a big mm-hmm. deal. She can do anything else she wants. And like, I think Boimler is a little bit, his head is gassed up by the prestige of Starfleet, but
right.
Tendi and Rutherford are just enthusiasts. They want to like, they want to geek out. They want to do like interesting shit. And this is a place that they can go to do that.
Well, I think crucially what we find out later is that, that nepotism is involved in Mariner's career where it is not in Boimler and Tendi's careers. And so like you get that contrast between people who tried really hard to get there and a person who might feel like that they just deserve it based on name.
She's a, for some reason, Jake, if for some reason Jake had gone to the academy with Nog.
Right.
So yeah, we kind of sleep in a hallway. It's a little disappointing, but eventually when you rank up, you get your own room.
We get to see a lot of areas of a ship that we suspected existed, but have not seen before, like the bunk beds.
Yeah, and we're not talking about shuttlecrafts, buddy.
No, an entire hallway filled with them. Enough to suggest that maybe you're not hot bunking on a ship like the Cerritos, but maybe you are.
Yeah, we see, you know, windows. We get to go to the holodeck, and that's very exciting for Tendi to see. She's apparently never encountered sand, and you know, sci-fi characters and sand always have fitful relationships.
It's coarse, and it gets everywhere.
You get another sense of their differences. You know, when you're new to the holodeck, I think you want to act like you've been there before, right? Tendi doesn't have that kind of chill. Boimler definitely does, in that he's not interested in what would interest most people. He wants to see his favorite areas of the ship instead. he sort of has a Barclay-like covetous relationship with different departments aboard the ship, I think.
He's a real tryhard, and that is like so far from Ensign Mariner. It's amazing that Boimler and Mariner are even pals, given how opposite they are.
Right. The scene ends with Mariner evoking an all-nude Olympic training facility scene, which makes me wonder, are the Olympics still happening in the 24th century, and are they humans only?
As a supporter of no Olympics, I really hope not.
Yeah. An all-human Olympics.
Why, the very name is racist.
Boimler gets called up to the bridge, and this is very exciting, but also nerve-wracking for him. And nerve-wracking especially because while he's up there, the first officer, voiced by Jerry O'Connell.
Sliders.
Speaking of nepotism, asks him why he's not at his post when Captain Freeman, voiced by Dawn Lewis, grabs him and takes him into her ready room and basically asks him to become a professional snitch.
And because Boimler is such a tryhard and, I mean, probably a starfucker, he does not resist this mission at all. He's getting the attention that he craves.
Yeah.
We know that he views being on the bridge as just being a treat in and of itself. To get any of the captain's attention here, even if it's negative, he's soaking it up.
This would be like if at a Max FunCon, Travis McElroy like called you over and asked you to, hey, like that guy Ben, I want to keep tabs on him. Could you commit to reporting back on him for me? Would you do that for me, Adam?
Yeah, like Travis McElroy would even know who I was. That's a weird-ass fantasy, Ben.
What? What? What's happening?
What?
What's all this?
I'm trying to save you.
What is this?
Ransom has been bitten by a bug as he was wrapping up the away mission, a scene before, and there's an ECU on his neck that we get a couple of times between now and what happens in the bar area that makes you think something bad is going to happen.
This looks like a very angry zit.
I like the more and more characters we meet on this show, how Lower Deck Season 1 is leaning into the weird facial hair choices that every other Star Trek series has ever made. You know, like there's weird mustaches, there's male pattern baldness, there's asymmetrical hair like with Tendi. Like there's a real diversity in hairstyle on the show that I love a lot.
I saw a lady with a Geordi visor that I really appreciated.
There's a Sikh head wrap in the shuttle bay.
Yeah. I mean, I think that like we talked about this on a little bit on our TAS episodes, like some of the things that you get to do in animation are, you know, design characters that would be impossible to do practically. But also I think that TAS looks shitty because basically all the characters look the same. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I notice it more in animation or if I just notice it more lately, but the amount of different kinds of people on this ship really stood out to me as being fun and cool.
Right. It feels like they're filling the scenes with visuals to enjoy.
Computer, send me a suck up to clean up my mess. I have a giant torso and little hands, over.
So we get kind of two stories in this episode that run in parallel, and I'm not really sure which is the A and which is the B, but in his capacity as professional snitch, Boimler spots Mariner driving off in a Star Trek Nemesis-style truck with a bunch of contraband on the planet surface. So he goes and follows her. Meanwhile, Ensign Rutherford is on his hot date in the bar back on the ship. This is where Commander Ransom's bug bite fully kicks into high gear, and it's a zombie bug bite.
Rutherford's date sounded so familiar to me, and I just couldn't place her voice. And then it clicked. Like, that's Jess McKenna of the Off Book podcast.
Oh.
And she's great in this.
I've seen her perform live a couple of times. She is a super talented singer and performer.
Yeah, cool to see people 1 degree of separation involved in this show. That's fun.
Yeah. Is Ensign Barnes a Trill?
Maybe she's pre-Trill. Maybe she hasn't had the implant yet.
Or maybe she's like half Trill. She's got like some of the spots, but not all of the spots. I don't know.
I think it'd be weird if you were half Trill and there was like body symmetry to the dots that worked in that way. Like just above the waist, just above where the ankylosaur would go in is where you got your dots. When you get ankylosaur implantation, they go all the way down.
Mm.
When Ransom turns in the bar, it is a fucking bloodbath.
Yeah.
It is like straight out of Alien when the chest burster bursts forth. I feel like in less than 5 seconds, a dozen people die.
Yeah, the whole bar turns into a, you know, just phaser fire everywhere, black vomit running down the walls and onto the floor. I like that that Ensign Rutherford and Ensign Barnes kind of continue their date while they're hunkered down behind that table.
Yeah.
They keep kind of trading banter.
So, where are you quartered?
Deck 9, by the squash courts?
This is pretty, like, routine shit if you're a Starfleet, right? So, like, no reason to let it ruin your good time.
Back on the surface, Boimler has confronted Mariner on what he believes to be a real Oliver North arms trading situation. And when she produces the shovel, he realizes just how wrong he's been.
Yeah. Unclear if this is a prime directive violation. I guess it wouldn't be if you've made first contact.
Right.
But she is providing farm implements to a couple of impoverished locals, and he doesn't understand that, so he pulls a phaser on her and them, and it gets into a real, like, regulation sighting contest, and the local aliens get a little weirded out and run into a cave, and they leave the door open to this cave, and it's revealed that this is not a cave, but a paddock for a giant spider.
There's one of the porcine Galadonian aliens in their overalls yelling, "Shooter! Shooter!"
You're not supposed to shoot her, though, because it'll spoil her delicious, delicious milk, Adam.
Right.
So this turns into an opportunity for Ensign Mariner to kind of show Ensign Boimler what it is like to be a somewhat more seasoned Starfleet officer than he is. She's been on 5 ships. She's been all over the galaxy. She's been on lots of planets. He's only been on 4. And he counts Vulcan and Earth among those.
You can't. I mean, those don't count.
Those are barely planets, Adam.
Yeah. He's a guy who's padding his sexual numbers.
Yeah.
in mixed company.
She is the kind of girl who says, are we in a dangerous fight with a giant beast? Let's get naked.
This is another pretty clear distinction between Mariner and non-Mariner here, because she has the experience of solving her own problems and leans into that idea pretty hard here, where Boimler is so green, so callow, that he wants to ask for help immediately. He wants to go back to the ship right away.
Yeah, she throws his comm badge into the distance, like that lady that tricked Riker into bringing the game back to the Enterprise.
Yeah, usually that leads to some Juma Haron whenever a badge gets thrown.
Yeah, well, she throws the badge and then they get naked. So it's not super far from what happened in that episode. She tries to tackle this spider. It's kind of reminiscent of that scene in Starship Troopers where Rico gets on the back of the giant bug.
I thought the same. That was fun.
Yeah, but she gets thrown off and Ensign Boimler starts getting sucked in and out of the mouth of this spider.
Oh, give it back, my friend, you big spider!
You can't tell me that the writers of this episode are not huge fans of the movie Evolution, I think, from this scene.
Yeah.
You and I are big fans of that movie. I think it is a funny, funny movie that I would recommend. But that's what this scene made me think of right away.
We should do a bonus episode about Evolution sometime.
Deal.
So spider fight continues apace, but it's just a fun fight. The locals explain that spider is a vegetarian, an herbivore, and it's just sucking on Boimler for his liquid?
It's just sucking. It's not fucking.
Eating ain't cheating, as they say on Galadonia.
I love how chill the pig people of Galadonia are at the sight of one of their livestock just like slurping a person like so much spaghetti.
You want a snack or something?
I love the design of those characters, you know? Like, that's another using animation for its strengths moment.
I wonder if that they are pink was a nod to animated series. So many aliens are on that show.
That's a good point. Back on the Cerritos, the date continues with a very Star Trek colon first contact reminiscent walk across the hull. Ensigns Rutherford and Barnes, they need to get to another part of the ship and they have to put on spacesuits to do it. They get into a turbo lift or something, and they're like catching their breath and laughing, and they start to get a little romantico. But then Ensign Rutherford gets a little distracted by the fact that their comm badges didn't override the latch opening mechanism when they entered at first. And he gets real excited about the running a diagnostic opportunity.
I feel like when you've made it to the big D, you have room for a life outside of work in a way that the people in lower decks don't have the room or the time for most times. Like, and that's what this Rutherford scene tells me. Like, he is so eye on the ball, eye on career, eye on work.
Yeah.
That he just doesn't have the room for anything else. He cannot even notice this love right in front of him.
Yeah, she's such a babe. Focus on her. In the six bay, we get a few scenes with Ensign Tendi, you know, just basically running around doing anything she can to help the cat-looking Dr. Tiana, who is a doctor that really reminds me of like Bones McCoy and Dr. Pulaski in a lot of ways.
Her bedside manner is so bad, Ben, that I called her Dr. Cat's unprofessional therapist.
the Six Bay is a fucking mess. It's just full of black barf.
It's a floor drain free area as far as we can tell, and that's going to be a real mess to clean up later.
Ensign Boimler and Mariner, after their scrap with the giant spider, beam up, and Ensign Boimler is covered in this goo, this pink goo from inside the spider's mouth. And immediately upon getting onto the ship, Dr. Tiana analyzes the molecular structure of this goo and realizes that it's the key, it's the linchpin to stopping the zombie plague from spreading through the ship. And I love the way they frame these shots, like kind of shifting the focus from the foreground of all of the bridge crew to the background characters sitting there, like having gone through their own ordeal. And the bridge crew are all kind of congratulating each other for solving the zombie plague problem. Well, Ensign Mariner is like, hey, like Ensign Boimler, like got the goo, so you should give him some credit. No? Okay. Whatever you got to do.
The captain kind of anonymizes Boimler, even though they've had meetings together. She refers to him as the slime, basically. We must protect this slime. It means if you don't make it to the Six Bay for Dr. Katz to make the cure to this vaccine.
As long as they get some of the goo there, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it means. It does really matter.
Yeah. Boimler has a little kind of after action with the captain. He actually kind of covers for Mariner. So it seems like he has realized that he should be more loyal to his friends than to these elitist fucks at the top of the ship.
As soon as Boimler's out of the scene, she whips around and FaceTimes her husband, who is an admiral, and they agree that this Mariner problem is a real issue for a lot of reasons. Maybe first and foremost is because it's their daughter.
Yeah. Big reveal. I liked it. I also liked the scene between Tendi and Rutherford in the bar at the end. It seems like maybe sparks may fly with those two. They're both try-hard enthusiasts.
Yeah. I mean, Rutherford doesn't seem like there's much of a future with Jess McKenna.
No, she's moving on to bigger and better things. But yeah, and then there's a little kind of button on the episode moment with Ensign Mariner and Ensign Boimler, where she kind of sees his potential finally.
It would appear as though the rest of the series will be more friendly between them as a result of this mission.
Yeah.
They met their challenge head on. It formed a bond between them, and it looks like it will mean that Mariner takes it upon herself to be Boimler's mentor.
Yeah. She's an interesting character because she's really got a hostility toward ambition. And I wonder if that is a reaction to demotion. Like, okay, well, if I'm not going to like excel in this, then I'm going to be mad at anyone that does.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
Did you like the episode?
I did like the episode. It did a great job of feeling like a real Star Trek show while also feeling funny and inventive and a fresh take. I don't know. It's interesting. I've seen a few tweets online where people are posting like, wow, I really liked the first episode of Lower Decks. And then you see the replies to those tweets filling up with, I saw the trailer and it looked like dog shit, fuck Rick and Morty. I was like a very late adopter of Rick and Morty, but I was also a late adopter in like an almost total vacuum in terms of knowing what the Rick and Morty fandom is like. I had heard from a couple of people that are like in their 40s that they had enjoyed episodes of it. So I gave it a try and I was like, I think this is a funny and smart show. And then like, you know, it's that finding out what Sublime fans are like.
Yeah, it's not the band I hate, it's their fans.
Right.
That kind of quality, yeah.
And so, like, I think that there has been a lot of weird prejudice about this series from that quarter where people are worried that it is going to make, it's going to be a poison pill for the Star Trek fandom and bring an undesirable kind of asshole into the fold. And I don't think that this show will do that. Like, that's my prediction based on the two episodes that I have seen.
I think proportionally there's too much Star Trek here versus the amount of Rick and Morty in it for that kind of center to hold.
Yeah. And it's got heart, you know? And I think that's the crucial element for a snarky, wry, comedic cartoon show. Like, that's the reason I love The Simpsons and don't particularly care for South Park. Like, The Simpsons has a fucking ton of heart. I think this episode proves that there is some real heart in this show. So I liked it a lot.
I did too, Ben. And I got to say, I expected to like it. I think when I read about the people involved in it, my expectations were high in a way that you do not want to go into a new thing like that, I don't think. Just my experience has been littered with a lot of letdowns in that way. But I really like the episode. I like the second episode too, which we'll talk about next week. But I mean, maybe the one thing that I'm known for on this show is making the case for Star Trek as a place. And when you refer to the people who are ready to hate a new Star Trek thing, it makes me pivot into that kind of defense. You know, Star Trek is not the Enterprise. It is not Captain Picard. It is not Gene Roddenberry. It isn't. It's a place to tell stories. And comedy is a kind of story. And I think any world has room for all genres. And I definitely feel like this is Star Trek in all the right ways. I think the hardest written entertainment form, I really believe, is half hour comedy.
Yeah.
You have so little time to establish story while at the same time giving us a joke, like a setup and a joke every 30 seconds. And it seems like an impossible task for a show that is not chained to a pre-existing world the way this one is.
Yeah.
And yet this one is, and it succeeds.
Totally.
In a way that feels miraculous at this point. Now, we have a lot more episodes to go. If it's like any other show, it's going to have great episodes and clunkers. But this was a really neat start. And I think it belongs in this greater Star Trek televised universe.
Well, do you want to see if we have any priority one messages on this program, Adam?
Yeah, we should take the priority one message, put it in our mouths, and then suck it in and out.
Gross.
That's what we do to all of them, right?
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Adam, we have a couple of priority one messages here. The first one is from 40-year-old Ensign Aaron L., and it's to any FOD in reach of this message. And it goes like this. This is a general distress call from the Hyundai Accent class shuttlecraft One Mo Coco Nono. After a brutal 18 months, I have finally escaped from a, quote, relationship, unquote, and am currently en route to the planet Madison in the Wisconsin system. Mm. Landing situation is uncertain but promising. My cat, Vicious, is mildly upset, but glad to be away from that dog. So that's the end of the message. I guess what 40-year-old Ensign Aaron L. is looking for is just friendship with FODs, but maybe also a romantic kind of friendship.
You know, there's a lot of great FODs in the greater Madison, Wisconsin area.
That's true.
And we met quite a few when we did a live show there.
That was a legendary live show where we both basically learned that we should not get shithouse drunk before we go out on stage, and also that we should definitely let Plevim and Raz give us top hats and let us ride their tandem bicycle.
Here's what I'll say. That was the perfect show for its location.
True.
When in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Drink Wisconsibly.
Ben, our second priority one message is from Captain Dave, the Tool Man Tool. It's to Ensign Scotty. The message goes like this. Imagine my surprise being called out by an ensign for being bad at board games when you didn't even bother showing up at Rock Weekend in March. Something about babysitting sick cruise ship passengers, a likely excuse. I challenge you to any board game at the upcoming Rock Weekend 2.0 in Rocktober. I'll even give you a 3 jazz gummy handicap.
Whoa, shit.
D-I-L-Y-B-I. I got news for you, Captain Dave. as much of a failure as Rock Weekend in March was, I don't like your chances of Rock Weekend in Rocktober. So I think you better kick it to next year as far as a live event goes. That of course, is the policy of Greatest Gen Productions.
Yeah.
I would not expect a live show out of either of us.
Whether you're an ensign or a captain, we want you to be safe out there.
Yeah. Whether you're an ensign or a captain, you can go over to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, get a priority one message, talk a little shit to another friend at DeSoto.
That would be fun. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message, and we appreciate it because it helps us keep this streak alive.
We do an embarrassing Star Trek podcast, and a big part of our success is owning that, being ourselves, in all our embarrassing glory. But what if we didn't? What if we were just a Star Trek podcast? No embarrassment, no comedy, just Star Trek podcast. If you're somebody who wants a website, you could go generic and bland and one size fits all on a social media platform, or you could buy a custom URL and design a custom website with Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for all kinds of people to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. So whoever you are, or whatever you're trying to do, own it with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second, go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself an Edward Larkin?
I think it's Mariner, and I think it's Easy.
Wow.
This episode. I think she's the one that's having the most fun. She's the one as uncoupled from the reality of her situation, maybe, as anyone else is.
Yeah.
If you're new to this show, this was the Drunk Shimoda nomination segment that we then renamed the Edward Larkin segment after the great Short Treks episode. Yeah, Mariner's having the most fun. What about you, Ben?
Hard agree. Mariner is the drunkest and having the most fun, and I feel like the most likely to accidentally unleash a swarm of tribbles just through negligence or carelessness.
Agreed. Well, the both of us are extremely likely to do another episode about Lower Decks. That episode is coming next week. It's Lower Decks Season 1, Episode 2. It's called Envoys.
Yeah, and we have actually already seen this episode, so I shan't reveal too much, but let's get some fun stuff with a Klingon warrior and some drunk driving.
You know what happens during road trip episodes, Ben. Bad things.
Bad things. Looking forward to it, but we're going to leave it with Robs from here. Thanks for listening, and thanks again to everyone that supported in the pledge drive, and I'm sure Robs will thank you as well.
Yeah, thanks everyone. We'll see you next week for the second in 26 straight weeks of brand new Greatest Discovery episodes.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica. It's produced and edited by me, Rob Schulte. Thanks again for all the support over the Max Fun Drive. We really appreciate you joining us on that chill 4 weeks of a drive. It was a lot of fun, and it really, really demonstrated how much the show means to you, and it means a whole heck of a lot to us. I love working on this show, so thank you. Find us on Twitter and Instagram under Greatest Trek. That's for everything Greatest Discovery and Greatest Generation. Those social accounts are managed by our buddy Bill Tilly. Thanks, Bill. Our theme music is by the great Adam Ragusea. He helped out during the drive as well. Go check out his cooking videos on YouTube. Leave us a 5-star rating and review on whatever podcatcher you have. It really helps us out. And we'll see you next week on another episode of The Greatest Discovery.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.